Steve Lacy's development as a musician parallels the history of jazz. New Orleans musician Sidney Bechet attracted Lacy to the soprano saxophone and to the sound of traditional jazz. As Lacy got older, the music of Thelonious Monk, Cecil Taylor, and Gil Evans challenged him to bring his instrument into a more contemporary setting. Over 20 years ago, Lacy packed his soprano and moved to Europe. One reason was there just wasn't enough work in the States for a musician whose instrument was not frequently heard in modern jazz. Lacy has returned for a brief performance tour. I spoke with him from New York, and he told me what he finds special about the soprano saxophone.
First of all, the range is higher, and like a trumpet, really, it overlaps. It has something to do with the trumpet, something to do with the flute, something to do with the right hand of a piano. It's the treble. It's the right hand. It's the melodic part, really, and that part is very attractive. It's just difficult technically. That's all.
When you started playing modern jazz and then avant-garde music, there were virtually no other soprano players. You were playing modern jazz before Coltrane picked up the soprano. Did you have to figure out how to use the instrument in a modern setting?
Absolutely. I had to invent everything. I had to. The whole thing had to be done from zero because there were no models, there were no guides, there was no books, there was no teachers, there was nothing. I had to do it myself.
When John Coltrane started playing soprano saxophone, did you see him as either detracting from your uniqueness or as keeping you company?
Yeah, more like company. He was really welcome. I was glad to. It was a surprise when he first took it up in 1960, but a few weeks later we were working in the same club. I was working with Monk, and he had his first quartet in the old jazz gallery, and there we were, the both of us, playing the soprano in the same club every night. So there, that was the beginning, really.
Did you ever sit down with him and talk to him about the soprano?
Well, sure. Yeah, before he got one. I mean, he came up to me and asked me what key it's in, really. And I told him it was B-flat, and he was very surprised. He didn't know that. It seemed like he was looking for something. He was looking for a way up from the tenor, and he didn't know how to split the tenor into a higher and a lower part, and the soprano was what he had been looking for.
Early on, when you started to play, you were playing an updated form of traditional jazz. I think frequently young musicians want to be very current. And I wonder what led you back towards a more historical form of jazz when you started to play.
Really, New Orleans and Kansas City, these were the styles I really liked, the early music. But I always had a certain progressive appetite, a tendency, and it was really Cecil who opened my ears to the more modern music, really.
Did you ever feel cut off from musicians of your generation in those early years?
Not until Cecil came up to me and said, "Why are you, a young musician, playing such old music?" That was a startling question. That was the first time I ever started to think about that.
And it was that comment that led you to venture into modern music?
Well, not that simple, but that was the opening of my friendship with Cecil, and he was the one that really took me by the hand and showed me what was happening.
You spent several years dedicating yourself to performing music written by Thelonious Monk. It makes me think that you were playing Monk's music as if it had become a discipline for you.
Well, I was looking for some music that would fit my instrument. There was nothing. And when I found Monk's music, it fit. It fit me and it fit the instrument to a T. So that was very important. Then the work began for me of how to play it on my instrument, how to make it sound good, how to learn all those pieces. But, of course, it was a school for me. It was my models of also of composition and for performing. And I studied that music for many years. I'm still working on it. But it was very important for me, for my instrument, and for my conception as a composer and as a player.
Mm-hmm. Monk heard you and asked you to play with him, and you played with his group for a while. Did you see his music differently once you started actually playing with
him? Of course, yeah, yeah. And he showed me many things, and he showed me what not to do, really. I had been barking up the wrong tree here and there, and he would correct me. And that was a big help to me. He gave me many little tips and told me what not to do, usually, and that was a big help. I needed that.
What's an example of something he told you not to do?
Well, don't play the piano part. I used to play the melody, and I tried to play the piano part, too, on the saxophone. I was so enthusiastic. But that was redundant, really. And he told me, look, don't play the piano part. I'm playing the piano part. I'm accompanying you. Don't accompany me. So that straightened me out right there. But there were 100 little things like that he told me.
What's another one?
Another one, he says, well, don't play all those strange notes just to be, I mean, really play the melody swing, pat your foot and sing the melody and play off the melody. Don't just play strange notes just because they're interesting. It's not interesting.
That's interesting that someone as eccentric as Monk would say, don't be strange just for the sake of being strange.
There was nothing eccentric about his music, really. It was genial. I mean, it was very, it was a long scientific process that led him to explore the possibilities of the piano and to write those pieces. There's nothing eccentric about them. They're very, very brilliantly made.
Well, your music started becoming more and more modern. You went from Monk to the avant-garde. You started doing a lot of free improvisation.
Well, these things were going on simultaneously. I was still working with some of the older players, but I was working with Cecil also and some of my own groups. And in some experimental groups, there were in New York back in the 50s, it was possible a certain mobility, and you could go between the different styles and different types of group all at the same time.
You spent some time doing a lot of free improvisation, which had no compositional structure that it departed from. Can you compare the pleasures for you as a player in improvising on something that's composed and just free improvising?
That's a good question. Well, free improvisation can be fun, really. It can be stimulating, can be very interesting. But as whether to produce it in public for public consumption, that's another question. And it depends on your appetites, really. I feel like a composer, really. And what I do is partially prepared and partially unprepared. So I like to do a mixture and an improvisation which is free within certain limits. But I also can do completely free improvisation, but I think it's more difficult to present that in public, that's all.
It seems to me that during your life, you've always, for one reason or another, been not at the center of the scene. Let me explain what I mean. When you were young, you were playing early jazz at a time when most of your peers were probably playing modern jazz. And then you played the soprano saxophone, an instrument that wasn't really welcomed into the heart of jazz for a while. There wasn't that much call for it for a while. And then you started playing very avant-garde music, also somewhat on the periphery, and then you moved out of New York altogether, moved away from the capital of jazz. I get the impression that you've almost, in a way, consciously or unconsciously, avoided really being at the center of things.
Well, you have a point there. That the word periphery is important. I think that if you're right in the center of things, it's especially in New York, you know, there's so many great musicians here and so much going on that it's hard to hew to an independent line here. You can't maintain a group here, and you can't maintain a separate station here because it's too mixed up. There's too much going on. So, if you're making music and there's a music all around you, there's no, you know, music for me has to come from silence, from space, from emptiness, really. And if there's no emptiness, if there's no tranquility around what you do, then it's very hard to concentrate. It's hard to produce that, really. I need a certain space around me.
Steve Lacy, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Steve Lacy has two new records, Only Monk and Sempre Amore, both on the Soul Note record label. This is Fresh Air.